This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Should probably kick in soon.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, if not, then maybe it's a tumor.
You think so?
No. I think it's not a tumor.
Okay. All right. Well, you're the one that brought it up. I didn't bring it up.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 168. Yeah. What did you watch this week? My name is Mike.
My name is John.
What's up, man?
I was trying to add that cunk.
John. My name is John.
Like a cat trying to cough up a fur ball. I didn't watch a lot this week.
Neither did I.
And what I did watch, I was kind of disappointed in. I was kind of in a funk all week anyway. Like, I basically, it's year end in my office, so everybody's absolutely bug nuts crazy. And
oh, yeah, yeah. Fiscal year's ending up, ended today.
Yeah.
Because tomorrow's July the 1st.
Yeah. So everybody's been crazy and running around. And so, like, I'd get home and I was just so stressed from everything that I'd put something on and I'd just get angry at it. Even if it wasn't a bad show, I was just like, fucking take my time, 9 hours in the office. So I was kind of in a pissy mood. So
I gotcha.
Yeah. Oh, did you see the good news, though? The wording that the governor used when she gave everybody July 5th off?
No.
She said the standard, you know, you all work hard and blah, 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 so I'm closing all state offices. She said anybody who's mandatory will get compensatory hours for any hours they work on that day.
Right.
So it's not this, oh, if you're working between 7 a.m. and 5
yes,
p.m.
Yes, yeah, so, like they've done in the past.
Right.
Yeah, which makes me not eligible because I work night shift.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it specifically says any hours you work on that day. I was like, yeah.
Yeah. No, I in fact do work 8 hours on that day, so I'll get 8 hours of compensatory time.
That's awesome.
Plus holiday pay for working the holiday at time and a half at my rate. Fourth.
Oh. I was talking the 5th.
But the state's closed the 4th and the 5th. I have to work both days.
Right.
So I'll get my 8 hours holiday pay.
Okay.
Plus I'll get time and a half my normal hours.
You don't have to yell, man.
I'm not yelling.
Right here.
And then I'll get the 8 hours comp time, which
would
is good.
Would I know if you were yelling?
I don't know. Yeah, you would. You've heard me yell.
Like once or twice. You
really?
Never have to yell.
I don't really yell.
No, I don't either. We don't have to.
Right.
All we have to do is just raise our voices a little.
And actually,
or get a little deeper
when people want to fight with us. This is my tactic. I know you do the same. I get quieter because if I talk quieter, that means you have to talk quieter so you can hear what I'm saying,
or
stop talking,
or
yeah,
they get louder,
yeah,
and then they realize what assholes they look like because they're yelling
and you're not.
You're sitting there going, "Wow, sounds like you're really upset."
Like that guy that yelled at me in the theater because before the preview started, I was looking at my phone.
Right.
And he jumped up and challenged me. And I just quietly said, "You can go sit down." And stared him down. And he goes, "Blah, blah, blah, blah." And I went, "You can just go sit down."
Yeah. I muted my phone.
And then unlike last week. And then the lady next to me goes, "What was wrong with that guy? You handled that so well." I'm like, "Cool, thanks." I don't know what was wrong with him. He clearly wanted to fight for no reason. So
what about you? Did you watch some stuff this week?
A little bit. I still have a couple episodes of The Twilight Zone left to watch to finish that out. I have the final episode of the season. And then I have the episode called Wonder Kid, which is about politics and a kid running for office. And I'm struggling to want to watch that one because it just seems so stupid.
You're not a politics guy.
I hate politics so much. But I will say, except, you know, what I kind of commented last week about the episode with the video camera, I've really, really enjoyed this run of The Twilight Zone.
Good.
I mean, you know, we've talked about wanting to have an anthology show that was a really anthology show, and this season of Black Mirror was very disappointing, except for Bandersnatch, obviously, but these three episodes they did was very disappointing. And, you know, most anthology shows now do full seasons. I completely forgot the Detour was back into watching. Wow, I just remembered now. Anyhow.
Damn it.
Yeah, I completely forgot that was back.
That was like a third of the TV shows that I watched this week.
I'm going to write it down. I haven't watched Game Changers yet either. It has only been 4 days since we last recorded, so, I mean, that doesn't help a lot.
Right.
I worked all 4 days since we last recorded.
What did you watch this week? We say it sometimes.
I know.
But it's more like, what did you watch in the past couple days?
Yeah, because, like, I worked a 16-hour shift and two 12-hour shifts, and only one 8-hour shift on these last 4 days since we last recorded. So I haven't had time to watch stuff, really.
Michael Labby, dead at 52.
Fuck. Yeah. But anyhow, I did start watching Star Trek Discovery.
Okay.
I've watched 4 episodes of season one.
Okay.
I wouldn't call it Star Trek.
I've heard that.
However, I really enjoy it.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, it's a great space show. They have some great stories. I mean, and yeah, they have like the little noises that make us, little sound effects like on the bridge that make the Star Trek. But it's just, it's such a departure from all the other Star Trek shows that we've had.
Mm-hmm.
And them dropping F-bombs is a little surprising.
Mm-hmm.
But it's such a departure from all the other Star Trek shows that we've had. And more, the Orville is more like what Star Trek was.
Right.
But I don't know. I never watched Voyager. So I don't have that to compare to.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I never watched Voyager.
What?
I didn't get into
it. Seriously?
Yeah. I've seen every episode of the original run. The original series with Shatner.
Yeah.
I've seen every episode of Deep Space Nine, every episode of The Next Generation. I've seen every episode of Enterprise. I've seen all the movies. I've seen the three new reboot movies, but I've never watched Voyager. Maybe an episode or two, but I've never really watched Voyager. So if it's anything like Voyager, I guess maybe it is like Star Trek. But, yeah.
Why? Was it because there was a female captain?
No, I think that's because it was on,
like, sexist?
Yeah, that's right. I think it's because it was on UPN.
Yep.
And we didn't get UPN for a while.
Oh.
In our cable package. Because there was a time when we lost. Or we didn't get. Yeah, was it on UPN or the CW?
No, it was on UPN.
I mean the WB. Remember the WB?
Yep.
Like the first few years of WB and UPN, we didn't get that channel. And then we did.
Okay.
But yeah, I never got into Voyager.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's surprising.
A lot of
people consider it one of the better ones.
Right? See, I was thinking about that the other day, the fact that I never really watched Voyager.
Please state the nature of your medical emergency.
However, I will say this.
Okay.
As a Voyager reference, I don't get it.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why I did it.
That's fair enough. I was looking at the timeline-wise, and I guess I didn't realize that Discovery actually happens concurrently with the original series.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Did you know that?
I did not.
I thought it took place before.
That's what I had thought as well.
Which is kind of odd than why Captain Pike's in season two, but I guess they'll explain that when I get there. But yeah, if you go on, the old Wikipedia, okay, that's not working well. Star Trek. Star Trek franchise. Sorry, just give me one moment. Here we go. So, Star Trek Discovery. Star Trek, the original series, takes place between 2254 and 2293, if you include all the movies.
Okay.
And Star Trek and Enterprise was 2151 to 2155.
Okay.
Next Generation, it was 2364 to 2379. Deep Space Nine was 2369 to 2375. Voyager takes place 2371 to 2378. And then the reboot films are 2233 to 2263. Discovery is 2256 to current. It's still open, still running.
Hmm.
So it takes place 2 years after the start of the original series.
Interesting.
So when I think about it that way, and then I look at the technology they have in Discovery, and I think about the technology in the original run, I realize that it's been, you know, 60 years or 50 years since the show was made. So right. We definitely have advances. But, like, if you were to watch the show, I had talked to one of my friends, Brandon, who watches the show or has watched the show, to ask him his feelings about this. But they introduced technology in this series that we've never seen in any of the Star Trek series.
I don't like that.
Well, neither did I at first. But he says they explain it well and just stick with it. Trust me. They make it make sense.
Okay.
But they institute a technology that we've never – because the first time I see this technology, and I'll just say it has to do with the warp drive, okay? I'm like, well, why haven't we – why, you know, like this would be something that you'd want to have. So either this technology must not work and gets destroyed or something bad happens or whatever it is, you know? So I – anyway, so that's why I say to myself, it's not a Star Trek series, but it's a great space TV show.
Okay.
It's a great space drama, space opera, whatever you want to call it, you know?
Yep.
It's a good space TV show. I actually had a fucking moron at work the other day asking me what came first, Star Trek or Star Wars. I just walked away.
How is Adam doing?
All I'm saying is I just walked away and went, use Google. At least they didn't say it was the same thing. So anyways, yeah, but I'm really enjoying it, and you should watch it.
You know, Rogue One proved to us that decades can pass since a movie comes out. Technology on our end in the filmmaking industry is better, but you can still go back and make it look like that movie that it's supposed to take place right before.
Rogue One was tremendous, and they did a great job of that, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for these guys to be introducing new tech that has never been seen, I'm very skeptical.
Well,
I will watch it.
I will say this. The new tech is just really one item.
So far.
Right. Fair enough. And this is one thing that I brought up to Brandon as well. And he was like, oh, I didn't really even notice that. Apparently, their transporter on the ship can transport people not just from the ship to the planet or ship to ship, anywhere inside the ship. Do you remember that happening in any other series?
Yeah.
Okay, no, so you do?
I can't give you a specific example, okay. But for some reason, I feel like, you know, they could go into the transporter room and then be beamed onto the bridge, which would only make sense.
No, they don't go in the transporter room on this. They're, like, in engineering.
No.
And they go, you know, like, you know, be, you know, get us to the medical, whatever. Get
That's
us to
just
the doctor.
Lazy.
Yeah, and they beam them from there to the doctor's office.
No. Every other series, you had to either start at or end at the transporter room.
Yeah, no transporter room in this. They're just being right from the engineering to sick bay.
That's lazy.
So
that's absolutely lazy.
And the captain did it from like the captain's quarters down to some sub level of the ship.
God, I want a beer. Beam me over to the fridge. You know, what the fuck?
So
what the hell is that? They don't have a budget to let people run through a hallway? The Star Trek shows had great running through hallway scenes, and all the actors were tested in their ability to go, whoa, and fall up against the walls when, you know, the screen would shake.
Right.
You're making me angry.
Well, okay, just those two things.
So far.
The communications devices.
You're adding a third thing now? It's just those two things. But wait, there's more. Mikey Mays here.
They're the same. That's one thing I notice.
No, what do you mean by the same? Are they the same as in, like, Next Generation
with original, the lapel pin? No tapping on the lapel pin.
A little it's flip open.
Flip, like the flip phone from, like, the original series. Like, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm like, I went, okay, that's cool at least.
At least.
Well, the uniforms are different, too. There's no color coordinating on the uniforms.
What?
Yeah. Everyone's uniforms are pretty much the same.
So in the 2 years since Star Trek started,
colors. This is a scientific ship or something, so I don't know.
So they should all be in blue.
They are. So they introduced a new character that's different. It's not the same old school.
How many episodes are you in?
Pants. Four.
You're four episodes in.
Yeah. I like it, though. I like it quite a bit.
Okay. You said they introduced a new character. Were they wearing rainbow suspenders?
No. They didn't introduce a new character. Yes, they introduced a ton of new fucking characters, every single one of them on the show. But anyways, this girl named Tilly pops up, and she's got red hair, and I went, and she was so annoying. I'm like, she's going to die. That's the new red shirt gimmick. They're going to have red hair. No, she's still alive. So I just like, because there's no red shirts. I mean, there's a lot of people getting killed. But when they introduced her, I thought, oh, that's going to be the gimmick. Red hair means the new red shirt. Ha, ha, ha. That's the homage. Nope, she's still alive.
Dude, if they had done that,
I would have loved it.
The ginger community would have been up in fucking arms.
I don't care. I think it would have been awesome. Like, anytime a redhead pops up on this show, I'd just be like, I think that would have been amazing.
Oh, my God, that's awful.
I thought that would have been fun. But, yeah, you should watch it.
I watched The Detour this week.
I'm looking forward to Picard. Go ahead, The Detour.
Moving along.
Sorry.
I watched the second episode of Euphoria.
Oh, how was it? Is it still just as kind of raunchily grotesque?
Yeah, except for, like, in the first one where they kind of, like, forced you to learn all these new people, this one they kind of focused in, and I liked it a bit better. Like, there's this whole montage in the beginning where they talk about, I can't remember, I want to say Tyler, but basically the jacked up kid there whose dad was fucking the underage girl. They kind of do a montage where Zendaya narrates and talks about, you know, how he got to be the way he was and growing up and what he saw his parents do and what he saw his dad do, you know, how life was like this for him and how once he hit puberty, he instead of discovering what he didn't like, he discovered what he liked about girls. And so, like, you know, they go through this whole list. He liked this. He liked this. He liked this. It was very American Beauty-esque. And also the fat girl there who lost her virginity. The kid riding her from behind taped it and posted it. And so everyone was like, oh, my God, is that you? Is that you? And she freaked out.
And the first one, we don't see
anything. Right. This time you actually get to see from behind. She's still wearing her bra. And it's very amateurish. It's just the guy holding his phone up, you know. And she's like, oh.
And the other two people still in the room watching?
Not that you could see, no. So,
the twins,
you know,
or whatever.
Everyone at school, you know, says, oh, that's you. And then the principal calls her in, and she pulls this, like, right out of her ass. She's just like, he's like, you know, is this you? You know, or were you in this video? And she's like, why? Because I'm fat? Are you trying to body shame me? And she just, like, goes right off on him. He's like, no. So she gets out of his office pretty scot-free because of that.
That has nothing to do with school.
Yeah.
That's annoying.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with school. But then that should not even be an issue.
By the end of the episode, she finds out that, you know, it's been uploaded to Pornhub, but it's gotten, like, hundreds of thousands of views, and there are all these people who are like, oh, my God, she's so hot. Oh, my God, I'd do anything to know who this girl is. So now she's getting ideas in her head.
She's one of them Pornhub actresses.
Uh-huh. And
they can make a good living.
That little blonde waif that Tyler's dad was railing in the front.
Yeah.
She's still on the Tinder, and, you know, she matches with this guy, shy guy, 18, and they talk and chat, and, you know, he really opens up to her, and she feels really good about it. And,
yeah.
You know, she wants to meet him, and at the end of the episode, we find out it's Tyler. And so that's going to be interesting. Dad's sloppy seconds, I guess. It's still dirty, but I like it better now because they're actually focusing on individual stories instead of just like, hey, look how screwed up this whole school is. Okay. You know, we're actually doing some character dives. Oh, and you remember how in the first episode you had Tyler's girlfriend just got drunk and jumped on that guy and dragged him into the pool and
screwed him in the pool.
Tyler, like, stalks him, finds out where he lives and does the old, you know, sit in his apartment in the dark. And, then he gets very violent on him. You know, he tells him that girl was 17 and you're what, 24? And he's like, 23? And he goes, no, you're 24. And he goes, I'm basically 23. I just turned 24. And he goes, no, you turned 24 5 months ago. And he just beats the ever-loving shit out of him and keeps saying to him, he's like, you raped her, didn't you? And he's like, no, I never raped anybody. And then he just punch, 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 punch. You raped her, didn't you? And Yeah, just absolutely.
That's how Tyler's going to convince himself in his brain that, that the girl he loves is not a cheating whore. She right. was raped, so that's she's right. a victim.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. And, yeah, so I'll keep watching it.
Okay.
For now. What you doing?
Oh, nothing. Just stuff and things. You know how that
He's
works.
Checking his text messages.
Well, I got a text message. I just want to see if those...
Was it a friendly message?
I wanted to see if his wife saying, shut up, you guys are being loud. It wasn't.
It never stops those.
Well, no, but...
It dims the light for about 2 or 3 seconds.
That's true. Except, I don't watch any other shows.
So you didn't watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
No, I think I've given up. What was it this week?
Two episodes, because we didn't talk about the last one. But the last one was a... Fitz and Simmons were stuck inside of a computer, kind of like the, whatever it was there, the Matrix.
Yeah, yeah.
And because, you know...
Framework?
Yeah, there you go. Because if you can link up their minds, then they'll be able to properly solve time travel. Mm-hmm. So we got to see, like, flashbacks of when they first met each other, when they first became Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. You got to see her as a little kid. And, it was okay. And then Enoch rescued them at the end because he didn't want to see them being tortured.
Good old Enoch.
Meanwhile, the next episode took place all on Earth because, you know, they can't do an episode where everybody's together
right.
where they tell all the stories. And basically, Sarge is captured and his
by who?
S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay.
His big strong guy has been captured as well, and he's coughing a lot. Turns out because he was becoming a dragon somehow. Well, that's what they said, at least, because he started breathing fire. He stopped breathing and then just started breathing fire to, like, kill them and melt his way out of there. But they put his fire out with a fire extinguisher and, you know, knocked him down. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but basically Sarge is telling them about the Shrike, which are those bat-like creatures that infect people. And he's like, oh, by the end of today, I'm going to be in charge. And Mac's like, I don't think so. And then they capture two humans that have Shrike inside of them, and they put them together in a box. Because that's smart. Put them both together.
Yeah.
And then they do a Wonder Twin Powers activate. I swear to God, they put their hands together, and they're like, oh. And then they just start exploding, and they get out of one of the, like, those containment cells that'll hold anything.
Yeah.
They start busting out of that. And basically, Mac turns over control to Sarge. He's like, yeah. Just tell us what to do. And he's like, all right, cold. They can't stand the cold. Blah, blah, blah. And he's like, see, I told you I'd be in charge. So, yeah.
Yeah, I guess I don't feel so bad about not watching it.
It's all right. The only other TV that I watched this week is I started watching an Amazon series.
Yeah.
The Man in the High Castle.
Okay, so Kate just listened to a podcast. This is Utopian podcast that I actually found. Because you know the Oneida Civil War Company? They make flatware.
You said Oneida Civil War Company.
Silverware.
Yes.
Silverware.
Yes, that I know.
I said silverware. Just sounded like Civil War to you. Anyways, but you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I know what you're talking
about. Okay, so that actually, Oneida actually started as a utopian society in the middle of New York back in the 1800s.
And interesting.
They started making silverware.
They started making
forks and spoons.
What about knives?
Them too, as Labels? A way to make money.
Okay.
And then when the Utopian Society collapsed, they continued to make silverware and end up becoming this.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's actually really kind of neat. So I listened to that episode and I told my wife about it. And then she said, hey, did you listen to the one about Germania? And I said, no. She's like, you definitely should. So it was all about Hitler's planned utopia.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about it in great detail and what he had planned and the constructions of this, that, and everything. And then at the end, they say, yeah, there's an Amazon series coming out called Man in the High Castle. And basically it's about if Hitler had won the World War II, and it kind of shows his plan for Germania is brought to life in this TV series.
So I kind of wish
we kind of wanted to check it out, but we haven't. So yep. Tell me about it.
Okay. So my story, the reason that this comes up is because I was sitting at my desk the other day and my director came over and, you know, he's a bit of a flake. This is the guy that I told you about who, like, his master's is in Norse poetry.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone has a master's degree in Norse poetry.
Yep. But he's a fairly cool guy. So we're sitting there and he asked me something and then he points to, I got a couple of Funko Pops up there. One of them's Deadpool with candy canes instead of swords.
Nice.
And he points to the other one. He goes, "Who's the guy in the hat?" I went, "That's Mr. Robot." And he looked at me and I said, "Well, it's a character from a USA TV series about mental illness and drugs." And he goes, "I love it." I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Oh, I love the series. I've seen all three seasons." He goes, "It's great." And I was like, "Really? You know it?" He goes, "Oh, yeah." And we start talking about Mr. Robot. And I'm like, "This is great." And he goes, "Have you seen The Man in the High Castle on Amazon?" And I was like, "I have not." And he goes, "You've got to check it out." I said, "Then I will. Because if we could sit here and talk about Mr. Robot, and then you tell me about The Man in the High Castle as a segue, then I got to check it out." So that's why I started watching it. So the story is this. Essentially, in the race for the war, Germany and Japan got there first before America did in this reality.
Okay.
So now if you look at a map of the United States, there's the West Coast is all Japan.
Makes sense.
The East Coast and most of the Midwest is – or the central area is all Germany. I mean, Germany took a lot of the United States. Japan took – maybe down to the Rockies, if that. And then there's this giant wasteland in the middle that's just – it's a void. It's a neutral area. Nobody owns it. Nobody controls it. So, again, on the West Coast, everything is Japanese. Every billboard, every everything. East Coast area, it's all Nazi propaganda.
What about Canada? Is Canada still around?
Canada is their own thing, I guess.
I'm just curious.
Yeah.
I mean, they're in the war effort with the Allies as well.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm trying to think of the map. They haven't really talked about that. So I'm not going to give away all of it. I'm about five or six episodes in. But essentially, it starts off – what's really throwing me is my sister is named Juliana. It's not a common name. But the lead actress in this, her character's name is Juliana. So every time they say it, it kind of throws me off because I'm not used to hearing that name in regular conversation. So – but there's at least one or two different resistances that exist.
Holy shit.
That
is Germany.
Oh, look at that. Canada did take over.
Germany is like all of Canada, Greenland, Africa, all of Europe, South America.
Yeah.
And then Japan.
Well, half of South America.
Yeah. Well, Japan has, like you said, like the western seaboard of South America. Central America, and then Alaska down to like Baja California and Tijuana. And on the other side, they have Australia and New Zealand, all the islands, India, China.
Yep.
And then either the rest is Russia or it's all neutral. And like,
there's you don't see
two countries,
Italy.
Yeah.
Cause you know, they were the third Axis power.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if that's going to come up, but anyway, so there are resistance movements that oppose Germany and Japan.
Oh, I believe it.
But, I mean, you're seeing the world map right there. What are they going to do?
Right.
So, the lead actress there, she finds her sister. Her sister, like, comes running up to her one day, and she's like, "I got to go. But I found something. I found a way out." And her sister sees her again later, hands her off a satchel, and says, "Just take this. It's a way out." And then runs away and gets gunned down on the street by Japanese people. Soldiers. Well, inside the satchel is a film reel, like an old 35 millimeter, you know, just.
Yeah.
Well, she watches it and she watches it like five or six times. And this is what's interesting about it. The film reel is a news reel without any sound, but it's a news reel that exists today in our world. It's Winston Churchill. It's D-Day. It's us winning the war.
Hmm.
It's like if you watch this, you go, "I've seen this." It's like stock footage.
Yeah.
And she's watching this newsreel. And allegedly, there's this person called the Man in the High Castle who makes these and shares them with people in order to give them hope. Because allegedly, he can see the way that things are supposed to be.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's like a time travel aspect to this or an alternate reality aspect to this or what, but it's just very interesting. If it was just a show about, you know, oh, what if they won? Yeah, that's cool enough. But the fact that they've introduced these films that have this kind of footage in them makes me really wonder what's going on. Hmm. And there's three seasons of it already.
Well, I kind of want to check it out already.
Mm-hmm.
And then based on what you're saying, makes me want to check it out some more. And then I didn't realize this. It was created by Frank Spotnitz. And Frank Spotnitz created the show. And I'm a big fan of his because he had his hands in The X-Files, Millennium, all the X-Files movies, The Lone Gunman, Harsh Realms, Night Stalker.
And it's based on a book by Philip K. Dick, who brought us Blade Runner.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, then.
So, yeah, if you want to check it out, I do recommend it.
I think we will.
By
the wife and I.
It's got some highly tense stuff in it. You do have to get used to some of the, like, they say Semite a lot. Like, you and I are used to hearing anti-Semite. That's some anti-Semitic stuff. But in this world, Semites are terrible. You know, those are Jews.
Yeah.
So they'll say, you know, some fucking Semite over there, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
So it's very different. Also, in, like, the first episode, they show a news broadcast, and Hitler's standing there, and he's older. Because, you know, years have passed since then. And he's older, and they're like, look, look, look. See how his hand's in his pocket? And he's like, yeah, what does it mean? He has Parkinson's. He's not going to be around much longer, maybe a year or so. Oh, then who's going to take over? So they're kind of progressing along that lines. They're saying, you know, the Fuhrer is going to be gone, and he's already got at least two guys that are ready to take over for him.
And this takes place in the 60s, I think I read?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, so this is established. This isn't like, oh, you know, the next year after they won the war. Apparently, the one remember how, you know, when the U.S. dropped the bomb, it was Nagasaki and Hiroshima. In this case, it was Washington, D.C.
Okay.
They talk about it. Multiple people have talked about it. You know, oh, they've dropped a bomb on D.C. They won't hesitate to drop another one. But it's interesting because they call it an H-bomb.
Hydrogen bomb.
Yeah. Rather than an atomic bomb.
Well, I think we had the atomic bomb. I think Germany had Japan had the hydrogen bomb.
We're all working towards the atomic bomb. So
we actually made it. I think Germany had a hydrogen
bomb. Not in this reality.
Right, right.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
And again, I don't know if this is time travel or if it's alternate reality or if it's just – but those films is what's throwing me. And there's a lot to do with them. Like, there are people who will kill for them. The people in charge seem to know about them and want to collect them and get rid of them. So, but I will also caution you. There's a lot of political stuff in it. You know,
It's not.
You know,
it's not going to be current day politics.
No.
So it's not going to annoy me.
You've got like this ambassador meeting with this, you know,
right,
minister of defense.
I can typically handle things like that. Like the old school political stuff, I that's fine.
And everybody,
it's just new politics.
Like there's one character that you don't know if he is a spy,
yep,
or a double agent or a triple agent. Oh, and one of the lead Nazi guys who contacts, there's like a main male character, and his point of contact is a Nazi officer, and he's that guy who's the villain in everything.
Yep.
Remember in The Cape, he was Chess?
Okay, yep.
So that guy.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to watching more of it, and if you check it out, let me know. We can talk.
Okay. Do you watch any, so that's it for shows?
That's it for shows.
Watching the movies?
Unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
You?
Yeah.
Which watch?
It's called Then Came You. The wife and I actually just watched it today, earlier today.
I feel like I've seen it pop up on my Netflix queue.
It is on Netflix. It stars Maisie Williams.
Oh, yeah. And she's dying and she meets up with the boy who is afraid of death or something.
He's a hypochondriac.
Mm. So how was it?
It was good. We liked it. We enjoyed it a lot. It's kind of a coming-of-age story. Basically, like Maisie Williams, she's a 17-year-old who's got brain tumor and it's inoperable and there's nothing they can do. And that's how it starts out. You know, that's how it starts out.
Yep.
And her line is, after the doctor tells her all this, is like, well, you win some, you lose some. And her mom's like, oh. And then basically she meets this kid named Calvin. and he's kind of a hypochondriac. He's got his own issues going on, they explain in the show. And basically, he is a introverted, closed-off, sad sack of a person. And he meets this girl who's made this list they call to it's her death list to do before she dies type of thing. So it's a comedy. It's not a dark comedy. It's a comedy that has some dramatic elements at times because you are dealing with a girl that's dying.
Okay.
And who lacks the ability to wink, which is hilarious. Like when she winks, she kind of sticks her tongue out and it's just weird and it's funny.
Okay.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I mean, I wouldn't go, oh my God, everyone needs to watch this. But it's an hour and a half long and it's worth a watch.
Okay.
You know, there's some good touching moments in it. It's good story in it. Okay, so this is where it's hilarious for me. I'm trying to see who it is. The dad. Let's see here. Calvin Lewis. David Kochner?
Kechner?
Okay. David Kechner plays the dad.
I fucking love him.
He's...
Whammy!
He doesn't do comedy in this.
What?
He's like the loving, concerning, serious dad to Calvin who's worried about his son.
Really?
Yeah, it's complete opposite.
Seen Kechner do anything but just absolute comedy.
No, he has one, like, comedic line in it, basically. Wow. But otherwise, it's like a serious, but it's not like a deadly serious. Like, he's not trying to get some award from it. But it's just, he's just a loving, caring dad worried about his son.
Huh.
And it's weird because even my wife, because my wife loves Anchorman.
Mm.
And my wife's seen him in other stuff as well. And even she's just like, man, it's weird seeing him in this role. And I'm like, yeah, it is. Like, I keep waiting for him to be like, just anything. Yeah. I keep waiting for him to do something over the top and ridiculous, and he doesn't.
Did you ever watch The Comebacks? It was one of those spoof movies, like Not Another Teen Movie.
No, I don't think
so. And it was a football-based one.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It's one of the rare ones that I actually liked. You know, I actually thought that it was well done and humorous. I've seen it a number of times, but he was the coach in that, and his name was Coach. And, So you liked it?
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Nice.
I liked it a lot. It was fun. It's like I kind of wish she hadn't watched I'll Be Your Someday Maybe or Maybe Someday, the Asian movie about...
Always Be My Maybe.
Always Be My Maybe. She watched that like one day when I was at work, and I kind of want to watch it, but I haven't watched it by myself. And
you
I know you...
Watch
I know I can.
I watched it by myself.
And I know you do.
I'm still a man.
But I know you enjoyed it.
I may only be half a man, but I'm still a man.
Fair enough. I know you enjoyed it, but I enjoyed it. I mean, I think I would enjoy it, so... But yeah, then came You're Solid.
Cool.
I gave it a thumbs up on the Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
The only other movie I watched this week was Friday the 13th Part 9, or a.k.a. Jason Goes to Hell, The Final Friday. And I have stuff to say about this.
Go ahead.
Well, what movie did you watch, though?
I watched three of them.
Shit. Okay.
Pretty much, yeah. So, the first one was Thoroughbreds.
Sounds terrible.
I had seen it pop up on a couple of things. It's, it was an art house one that, you know, got a lot of awards, and people were saying it was so good. It's got two girls. One of them is the one from Split, you know, who actually survives.
Yep.
And they're both her best friend when they were in school. She's now tutoring her. And her best friend has discovered that she's basically some kind of a sociopath or psychopath. She doesn't feel anything. And she talks about how her therapist is tried to just throw medicine at her.
I remember seeing this trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anton Yelchin, it's one of his last roles.
Yeah.
And it even says at the end of the movie, you know, in loving memory of Anton Yelchin. The long and the short of it is this. She, little prissy girl there from Split, she has an overbearing stepfather. Not overbearing to the point where he rapes her or beats her or anything. He's just mean. So the two of them decide that they should kill him.
Yep.
And then they get Anton Yelchin to help them because, you know, he has a gun. And it's not good. It's not a good movie. I didn't enjoy it. I didn't find it humorous. I didn't find it fun. I found it annoying. So, yeah, I don't recommend it. Big thumbs down.
Okay.
And then on the subject of crap, I watched the new Robin Hood.
Oh, the one with Jamie Foxx and... Yeah?
Yeah, the kid from Kingsman. I can't even think of his name right now.
Fine.
So I wanted to like this movie when I saw the trailers.
Yep.
And I wanted to like it despite the fact that it's got like a 15% of Rotten Tomatoes. I wanted to like it because I was like, you know what? To hell with them all. You know, I'm going to watch it. And the action sequences are pretty good.
Yeah.
There were a few things that really bothered me. The plot, the actors, and the sets. Other than that, though, you know, really solid.
Just the plot and the actors and the sets bothered you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Really solid action. No. So basically, they take the traditional story of Robin Hood and they twist it. So now Robin and Marian are lovers. And they're going to grow old together in Locksley Manor because, you know, everything's happy in the world. Except that, you know, now he's been drafted into the war, the Crusades.
Yep.
So he has to go away. And they're fighting Arabs who have semi-auto crossbows. Like, they hold these things up and they've got a lever on the top and they go boom, boom. And every time they pull it back, it fires another bolt.
Okay.
And I mean, we're talking like long steel bolt, like railroad spikes.
Yeah.
That are ripping through wooden barricades and everything. I mean, they're just, this is technology they never would have had. And yet somebody decided, dude, you know what would be so cool? What if they could do this?
Yep.
To the point where even like later in the movie, the guards are using them and Robin's still running around with a traditional bow and arrow. And I'm like, dude, you're stupid. Why would you do that when these guys are, like, cranking him out? So, anyway. So, he gets left for dead.
Yeah.
He's almost dead. And then him and his fellow crusaders have captured a bunch of the Arabs.
Yeah.
And they're killing them.
Yeah.
Executing them in their camp. And he has a problem with that because these are unarmed men. And so he dissents. Not by, like, arguing with his commanding officer, but actually picking a fight and almost killing his commanding officer and gets drummed out and left for dead. So Marian is told he's dead.
Yep.
So a couple of years go by, and she gets together with this guy named Will.
Oh.
So then Rob, because that's what people call him, Rob, not Robin, Rob. So Rob comes back to town. And that's where the rest of the movie takes place, is all inside the town and the castle. That's it. There's no forest.
No Sherwood Forest?
No.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. There's a Sherwood Forest in the last 2 minutes of the movie as they're taking all their ill-gotten gains and smuggling it out of the city into the forest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to set up the next movie that'll never fucking happen, but that's obviously why they wrote this movie, was to set up a second movie. Yeah, so Rob sneaks back into town and talks to his friend Tuck, you know, the friar.
Friar, yep.
But, you know, always calls him Tuck. Hey, Tuck, what's going on? Tuck. Oh, I don't know, Rob. What are you up to?
And, where's Little John?
That's Jamie Foxx's character.
No.
You know, he has this long Arabian name that he can't pronounce. So he says, in your language, it translates to John.
Little John is a hulking, massive man.
Nope, he's Jamie Foxx without a hand. Because, you know, he was about to kill Robin and the captain came and cut his hand off. So now he's a one-armed man, one-handed man, and has to train Robin to be awesome. You know, even though he already had training to go over there and fight in the war, and he's been surviving for a couple of years out there. Everything takes place inside the city.
Yeah.
It becomes political because, you know, instead of robbing from the rich and giving to the poor, he's just robbing from the sheriff. Oh, he's playing Batman is what it is. Because as the Hood, he goes out and he robs from the sheriff and throws the money at people. And then he goes to the sheriff's balls and parties as Robin of Locksley and says, Oh yes, I'll donate money. Oh yes, I've still got my wealth. I'll pass money around here. And then he passes the money out and then goes and steals it back again as the Hood. And it just really wasn't good.
So what was the third movie you watched?
The Perfection.
Okay, well, now...
why don't you talk about...
Okay, final... say, hold on. Let me... Let's, okay. All
let's right. talk about Friday, because we got to talk about The Perfection.
Oh, yeah, we do. So my coworker and I, Jenna, we have been watching the Friday the 13th film. She had never seen them before.
Because she's 20.
Which is fine. I'm not giving her shit for that.
Like, the last one came out after she was born, or before she was born.
Jason, for the final Friday came out in 93.
And that's the one with Jared Padalecki, right?
No, that came out in 2009.
Okay. Was she alive?
Yes, 2009? That was 10 years ago. Okay. I hope so.
So she was 10.
Yeah. Okay. But anyways, so she's never seen any of the Friday the 13th films. So we started watching them, you know, at work on the midnight shift. So that's the shift we work. So, yeah, what?
It just makes sense.
Yeah. I mean. So anyways, I kind of got a running list of things because I kind of asked her, like, what she knew about Jason before she started watching these films. Like, what did she know about him? Because I think a lot of people have this predilection. Like, what's the first thing you think of when you think of Jason Voorhees?
Mass murderer.
Right, but what about appearance-wise?
Jumpsuit and hockey mask. That's traditional. That's what most people think of.
Okay. And her thought was, she thought that he was some guy who had a really messed up, who was a really messed up adult, who had a bad childhood, and decided just to kill a bunch of people. And she thought his killing grounds were like kind of spread over like a large statewide area, not just like a single wooded area, you know, by camp.
Not even a single wooded area, a single camp.
And she also didn't know there was so many. She thought there was like 3 movies. You know, 12. So anyways, we started watching them. And like, there's some things that I don't think people realize or take in consideration, or they don't remember when it comes to the Friday the 13th movies. Like, for instance, the movie's called Friday the 13th because Jason was born on Friday, June 13th. And he drowned as a kid at the summer camp. And in the first movie, it takes place on Friday, June 13th. But years later, where his mom comes back to take revenge on people who don't work at the – people who currently work at the summer camp but weren't there when he drowned.
Yeah.
And Jason's not even in the film. You know, there's that little cameo thing at the end, allegedly, where – little child Jason comes up out of the lake and grabs the girl, but that's a dream sequence.
Because the whole idea in the beginning was just for it to be like a horror movie, but a suspenseful, you know, a twist. It's Psycho.
Right, yeah.
Psycho was what it was based on.
Kinda, you know?
Because in that one, it was the boy who was pretending to be the mother.
So in the second film, part two, we finally meet Jason. And clearly, you know, based on the fact that we see his mom's severed head that isn't completely rotten away, it takes place not too – and based on the beginning of the movie, it takes place not too long after the first film. But we find out that Jason's been alive this whole time. He is disfigured, but he is a large hulking man who lives in the woods. Okay? Part two, he wears a hood on his head, like a burlap sack with one eye open. And
when I ripped over.
When I ripped, yeah. And at the end of part two, he's left for dead, but he's alive. Then in part three is the first time he finally gets the mask. But he's a human. In part two, he's human. In part three, he's human.
Mm-hmm.
And in part three, you know, and part four, the final chapter, he's also human. He, however, because at the end of part three, he's left for dead again, but he comes back in part four. But he doesn't he doesn't run after people, but he does hurry after people. He, you know, is hurt when he's injured. He cries out in pain. He is hampered by his injuries. It slows him down. I mean, like, he is just a human who has massive strength and great pain tolerance, apparently. Okay, but he's human.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, at the end of part four, he is killed. He's dead.
Yeah.
Part five.
Jason's dead.
Doesn't have Jason. It's called the final chapter. Part five, A New Beginning, has no Jason in it at all. We only see Jason in, not dream sequences, but basically Tommy's hallucinations of seeing Jason. And when we do finally see...
So now he's Freddy.
When we do finally see the killer, it's someone pretending to be Jason.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And in fact, his mask is even different. And this movie's called A New Beginning. But his mask is different. You know, historically, Jason's mask has 3 red arrows on it, one between the eyes and 2 below the eyes. And in this mask, he has 2 blue kind of oblong shapes under the eyes. What's kind of neat is the actor that played Jason in the movie, Part 5, he followed me on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. After I got into this debate about the Friday the 13th movies with others, he chimed in.
and then he gave me a follow. So I don't know. It's kind of neat, regardless. And he does. He's not one of those people that follows 50,000 people or anything.
Right.
Yeah. So anyways, yeah. And then part six is the first time we see Supernatural Jason. Now they've brought him back from the dead. Tommy Doyle and his friend dig him up. They stand.
They want to make sure.
Yeah, he wants to burn his. He wants to cremate his corpse.
Yep.
And he gets pissed off and grabs a fence post and drives it into his body. And lightning strikes it, and Jason comes back to life. And now Jason is the supernatural hulking monster who has no pain, can't be killed, can't be stopped, et cetera, et cetera. But at the end, he's kind of drowned in the lake. You know, he's held down with rocks and a chain around his neck. Okay.
But wait, there's more.
So then you have part seven, The New Blood, where they introduce this girl who's got telekinesis. She accidentally brings Jason back, and then she's able to stop Jason by the end of the movie. And then part eight, Jason takes Manhattan.
Good for her for cleaning up her mess.
Exactly. Right? They kind of make that make sense, where he is electrocuted underwater, and he comes back to life, he kills a bunch of people. So you have these eight films, one through eight, and they came out from 1980 through 1989. What?
You have these eight films, one through eight.
Well, anyways, but they follow a story from each one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from he's a human, you know, it's his mom, he's a human killer, he's killed, someone's pretending to be him now to cover up murders. And then he is brought back to life. Now we get the supernatural element into it. And then they end, Jason takes Manhattan in the subway, where he gets washed over toxic waste, because apparently every night at midnight, they flood the fucking sewer in New York City with toxic waste.
I still never understood
that. Neither do I. And Jason is transformed into, like when we last see him, he is now a little boy again who's dead and laying face down in the sewer.
Because that's how toxic waste works.
That is how toxic waste works. So then fast forward 4 years and we get Jason Goes to Hell. Where the movie starts out with a undercover agent who goes to a cabin in a Crystal Lake and decides she's going to take a shower because it's the best time to do once you first get to the cabin, and Jason shows up to kill her. No explanation as to how we got from the sewer in New York back to Crystal Lake as Jason again.
Right.
He now has, and his appearance is much different. And then he's set up and shot all the shit, and then they drop a fucking bomb on him and he explodes. And then his remains are brought to Ohio, to the federal morgue from Connecticut, where the morgue or the mortician or not the mortician, the doctor doing the autopsy, while examining Jason's heart, it starts to beat and he gets the overwhelming urge to eat his heart. And he does. And now he's Jason. And now he goes back to Crystal Lake, and now Jason keeps transferring from body to body because apparently he's a little fucking slug worm now, that each time he goes from person to person, he's growing bigger and bigger. And now all of a sudden, he's got this elaborate backstory from this bounty hunter we meet who knows all about Jason, apparently. And now the elaborate backstory has become that Jason Voorhees had a sister who had a kid. And the only thing that can kill Jason Voorhees is another Voorhees, but he's trying to be rebirthed, and the only way he can be rebirthed is in another into Voorhees woman, and on and on and on. And all this mythos that never existed before suddenly now exists in this movie, and it makes no fucking sense whatsoever. And at one point, we see the Necronomicon, not a version of the Necronomicon, but the Necronomicon from Evil Dead. Because apparently, I Googled this. The director of this movie, of Jason Goes to Hell, Adam Marcus, has confirmed that Jason Voorhees is a Deadite from Evil Dead in his story and in his mind. So that's why we have the blade, the dagger, and the Necronomicon there in the Voorhees household. So the little worm Jason.
So this was all fan fiction, essentially.
Oh my God, this was fucking like, I don't remember the movie being this bad until I watched it the other day. So worm Jason there crawls inside his dead sister's vagina and then explodes out of her, now a fully grown back to adult Jason with hockey mask on and the whole nine yards, and including the tattered clothes that he had on when we last saw him before he was exploded.
That's right.
And, you know, he comes back, and then they oh, and that's the other thing. Like, all these weird red demons come flying out of him, like red lights after he, you know, is after the mortician eats his heart. Anyways, and then now his sister is the only one that can kill him, plunges the dagger into his heart, and all these red lights start coming off him again. And then, like, the heavens open up, and now all these blue lights come down on him. And then demons come up out of the ground and grab Jason and pull him to hell. And, of course, the last thing you see in the movie is Freddy's hand coming up and grabbing the mask and pulling it down to hell as well. Because parts 1 through 8, Paramount owned and released the series. And now with part 9, it's New Line Cinema. I don't know where I was going with this other than to say that I don't remember the connection to Evil Dead the first time I watched it.
I don't either.
When I watched it years ago. I also don't remember being this much of trash as it was.
I do remember that.
Now, that being said, there are some good lines in the movie. Like, there's actually some decent acting, some decent lines. There's a lots of absurdity. But yeah, it's just... And now we're going to watch Jason X next, and I'm actually excited to watch Jason X because I know this takes place in the future, and I'm trying to remember, like, if they just completely ignore Part 9 or what they're going to do. But, yeah, I did, because, like, I didn't remember Parts 1 through 8 being as synced up as they were either.
Okay.
And how they managed to keep the stories rolling together somehow. And then Part 9 is just way out of left field.
Yes, it is.
And it was just absurd, and I forgot all about this Evil Dead connection that apparently only existed maybe in this guy's mind.
Mm-hmm.
I kept saying Tommy Doyle, it's Tommy Jarvis. But anyways, it's just, yeah, it was interesting, I guess. It was different.
So, does she... hate you yet for making her sit down and watch all this stuff?
She actually enjoyed parts 1 through 8. She was just kind of like, okay. Her favorite part is from her favorite moment from the movies so far is from part 3, when this poor fellow in the wheelchair gets a machete in the face and then he falls down this huge flight of stairs backwards in the wheelchair. So it's bumping all around and the machete's still lodged in his face. But she actually enjoyed parts 1 through 8 and how the kind of story went together and it made sense. And then we watched part 9 and it gets done. She's like, this is garbage. I'm like, yeah, it is. Anyhow, the perfection.
Yeah. So what'd I watched think? This tonight before I came over here. Okay. This is an interesting movie.
Yeah.
It's a horror?
I don't know. I think they categorize it as a black comedy, but I don't
know. No, there's no comedic parts to this whatsoever. And maybe I'm wrong when I think that black comedy has to have comedy in it.
I think it has to, yeah.
I think that that's part of it. Otherwise, it's just black.
Yeah, it's
dark.
Right.
So, for those who haven't watched it, you're going to get it ruined right now. So the movie will play out to a point, and then it seems like it's come to a conclusion, and then suddenly we'll rewind, and then it shows you what happened to lead up to that point.
Right.
Even though you've already watched it, but they show you like some little behind-the-scenes secret.
Well, they show you a different perspective.
Yeah. But what really happened? So basically... Yeah. It has to do with cellists,
yes.
Concert cellists.
Yes.
And there's this one girl with a nose ring who is like super good. She's a prodigy right now. And this other girl comes in and sees her, meets up with her. You know, she used to work that be tutored under the one of the brothers from Wings. She used to be his student, and now this girl is the student, and you know. She comes, she's like, oh, no, I couldn't possibly play anymore. My mother died, so I had to go take care of her. And so I'm completely out of practice.
She was the prodigy of this guy, right. And then her mother got sick, so she left this prestigious music place.
Right.
And now her mom's dead, so now she's flown to China
to
find this guy again
and
meet his new prodigy.
Right. But not to get back into his good graces, because at one point he's like, oh, I've arranged it so that, you know, the new girl there, Nose Ring, he's like, oh, I've arranged it so that you could play and she's going to play with you. And the other girl's like, no, 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 I'm way out of practice. I couldn't do this. I'm an amateur again because it's been so long. So makes them both play together. And then we get this nice little montage of the two of them playing together. And then, like, it's them playing, and then you see, like, them running down an alley together. And then them playing, them dancing at a bar and drinking. They end up going home and having lots of sex.
Having the sex, yes.
Yes, lots of sex. And then the next morning they wake up, and Nose Ring says that she's out of practice and she's hungover and she needs some water. And, you know, the main girl there, she's like, well, Lizzie, I think it was, or something. She's like, well, I got some ibuprofen I could give you. Now, immediately I was like, those are ginormous ibuprofen. Like, those looked like horse-sized ibuprofen.
And another thing that was said is during this discussion before they played together – the new prodigy, she's basically like, oh, after this is done, I'm going to go on these bus tours and just travel like a normal person, you know, not a celebrity, not so. I just want to experience like a normal person's life who goes on vacation.
Right.
You should come with me. Oh, I couldn't do that. Oh, you should. And then they decide to go together.
And meanwhile, as they were, you know, being all euphoric and everything, they saw some guy vomiting violently. He had a nosebleed and he was vomiting violently, and somebody said that there's something going on down at the southern border in this area, and it's like airborne and it's making people sick. So now they're on not a bus tour, because this was a fucking jacked up bus that was like just carrying people across the countryside.
Well, they're going to travel by bus. Not a bus tour, but travel by bus. Yeah.
And it was pretty sketchy, but, you know, there were lots of other Chinese people on there. Yeah. And Nose Ring is getting sicker and sicker. And she's like, her mouth has never felt so dehydrated, and she's got this massive headache, and then she starts to feel sick, and she vomits on the bus, and then she's like, I need to get off the bus. I'm going to shit. This was comical to me. She's like, I'm gonna shit.
If I take Charlotte a step, I'm gonna Lizzie.
Shit. Okay. So Charlotte's like, I'm gonna shit. If I take a step, I'm gonna shit. And they're like, no.
Lizzie's the black girl.
Oh, okay. So Lizzie is going to vomit and or she's going to shit.
Yeah, Lizzie's
gonna
shit herself all of a sudden. It was weird. And Charlotte's screaming at the bus driver.
Basically they get the bus driver to pull over finally, because one guy on the bus speaks English and tells him, you know, she's sick. She gets out there, shits all over the ground. She's like, I don't know what's going on. But she feels a little better, so she gets back on the bus. Then she starts feeling sick again and tries to open the window, and she can't get it open, so she vomits and projectiles onto the window. And then
Charlotte says,
oh my God, are those bugs? Yeah. And inside the vomit are all these maggots.
Yeah.
Like wiggling and wriggling. And so at this point I'm like, oh, so this is a sci-fi-ish horror movie. You know, there's some kind of thing that is infecting the people of this area, and, you know, we're going to see it firsthand, and why isn't she infected? Why is only her friend infected? Oh my God, is everybody on the bus going to be infected? So the bus driver kicks them off in the middle of nowhere. Middle of nowhere.
Well, she keeps vomiting on the bus.
Yeah.
And everyone thinks that she has this disease that's affecting people down in the southern part.
And there are bugs in her vomit.
Right.
Except there aren't.
Right.
So she basically, they get kicked off the bus, and now they're on the side of the road in the middle of nowhere, and suddenly her arm starts itching, and she looks down, and
Charlotte says,
Charlotte, I want to call her Kara.
Are there bugs under your, are those bugs in your skin?
Yeah, because she can see them. She's like, oh my God, I see them. They're crawling around under your skin. And she's like, get them out of me, get them out of me. And this is where it takes a twist, because well, see,
'cause at this point you're watching the movie, and you think like, okay, you know, the cello thing's going on. Now this is becoming a horror movie because they're on this bat, and she's vomiting, and there's bugs in her vomit, and there's bugs on her arm, and the friend's trying to help her, but not really, and it's just kind of craziness. And then
all of a sudden, Charlotte pulls out a meat cleaver and goes, you know what you've got to do.
Yeah.
And at that point I went, hold on a second. And fortunately the movie agreed and went, and then rewound.
Yes. All the way back to them, and just post-coitus.
Yes. But we got to see a couple of quick flashes where when she was taking care of her mother, she took the pills from her, and the possible side effects are hallucinations and nausea. And so she doped her up with these pills to the point where she thought she saw these things. And we get to see flashbacks, and there were no bugs, but she was leaning into it going, you know, there's bugs in your vomit.
Yeah, Charlotte's telling Lizzie this, and now Lizzie's seeing it. And she's still vomiting, but there's no bugs in there.
Right. Well, she planted a seed when they first got on the bus. She, like, tapped her on the back. She goes, what? She goes, oh, it was a bug. So she kind of had that in her head, and then the hallucinations took over. So
they also show us where she got the meat cleaver.
Yeah.
Other things along the way.
Yeah.
You know?
So now you're like, oh, now, okay, now this isn't a horror movie. This is a thriller. And this girl was jealous of the new prodigy and said, I'm taking my chair back. And so you're like, oh, so this was a revenge thing because, motherfucker, she cut her hand off.
Well, she cut her arm off.
Yeah.
Basically below the elbow.
Yeah.
Lizzie cut her own arm off.
Yes.
And then wakes up with a tourniquet on her arm and Charlotte's gone.
Yeah.
And there's a note.
Oh, but we saw in the flashback that Charlotte had been researching on the bus on her phone how to do an impromptu tourniquet.
Yes. Yeah.
And basically, yeah, there's a note and she's gone. So then we fast forward to Lizzie basically telling the maestro there, you know, the guy that she's living with, that
she's back in Massachusetts now at the Backroff or whatever the
right
fame the famed school is.
Yeah. And she says that she knows what happened. She goes, I was drugged up. She had me drugged up. They found me on the side of the road.
Yeah.
She goes, and I tried to get the police to help, but they told me I took the drugs myself. I insisted on it, and I cut my own hand off. So she didn't do anything,
right.
So they won't help me. And, you know, the maestro's like, oh, wow, that sucks. You know, that's terrible. But, geez, now that, you know, you don't have a hand and you can't play the cello, you got to go.
You got to go.
Because this place is for people who are prodigies and talented, and you don't have anything for us anymore.
I can't use you anymore.
And she's just like, I'll wash the toilets. I don't care. Just don't kick me out. I've got nowhere to go. And they're like, I'm sorry, you got to go. So now she's pissed. Now it's going to be revenge time. So you see, what is it, like Minnesota?
Yeah, Charlotte's in Minnesota, and she's just kind of like, I don't know, cutting up some vegetables and getting ready for a nice night in.
Yeah. And Lizzie shows up and tases her.
Yep.
And kicks the crap out of her, stomps on her face, and then we go back to the mansion.
Back in Massachusetts.
And she's got her tied up in the trunk.
Yeah.
He's like, you're not supposed to be here. She goes, well, that was before I had something that you wanted. Now I've got something that you want.
Yeah.
And shows them that, you know, Lizzie's tied up in the, or Charlotte's tied up in the
yep.
trunk. So now it's a revenge thing, except that it gets even darker because now we get to see flashbacks that.
Well, okay. Charlotte wakes up and Anton, who is Stephen Weber's character,
yeah.
Because they're there in the basement, okay?
And when we say basement, this is a mansion.
Right, it's a mansion. It's a beautifully finished basement
yeah.
that has got a private studio in it for performances and this and that.
Yeah.
And you meet these other people in China, like, that work at the school, all these three men and this woman and everything. And basically, when she wakes up, Charlotte tells Anton, hey, I orchestrated this whole thing for Lizzie to cut her own arm off because I saw in a photo of a magazine that she had a tattoo of this note on her. And I know what that tattoo means. And, you know, she starts accusing him of sexually abusing people. And this is being some of a cult. And Charlotte's got the tattoo. And
so she knew her time was coming. And
she's making all these accusations and he's not reacting. And then all of a sudden he fucking buckles on to her and drags her off.
And it was like that scene right there of him like wrestling with her
yeah.
and then dragging her like downstairs. And it was really well done because it looked pretty authentic.
Yeah.
Grabbing her by the feet and like dragging her and thump, 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 thump. And yeah. It was a pretty well done scene there. But there's no nudity in this movie, but
well,
it's all fuzzed out.
Yeah. Because we do see Charlotte then, cause she makes the accusations and you're like, well, is this real? Is this not real? I don't know. And then you see, like, Charlotte having flashbacks of, like, playing. And if they don't play it 100% correct, then they must suffer their perfection, which is Steven Weber walks out buck-fucking naked, and then the assumption is that they sexually abused the girl. And Everyone does. And so he basically chains Lizzie down and says, or Charlotte down and says, you're going to play. And if it's not perfect, then this new disciple they brought back from Japan, she's going to suffer the perfection.
Couldn't have been more than like 12 or 13
right,
years old.
Right. But that's and, how it always had. That's how they got these master. It's a sex cult.
Yeah.
Up thing.
And Charlotte, like at that point, cause she was like, I'm not playing for you. And Lizzie's down there. Lizzie's yeah. fine with this. Like, she's yeah. like, yeah, you're going to suffer, bitch.
Yeah.
And, Charlotte's like, don't do this to her. She's a girl. Just do it to me. Just punish me. Do it to me. Don't do it to her. And then he's like, you better start playing.
Yeah.
So she plays and she doesn't do it perfectly. Nope. And so, he basically puts his hand on the little girl's shoulder and says,
he implies.
Yeah. And then he says to his wife or whatever, he says, would you take her upstairs? It's past her bedtime.
Yeah.
And she takes her up and he goes, did you really think I'm a monster? And it wasn't even her age. He was like, she still needs to get her bow work done. She still needs to do this. She still needs to get her tattoo. Like, she's not ready yet for what I have in store for her.
So the three men start undressing. And basically it's implied that they're going to gang rape Charlotte.
Yeah. And Anton leaves. He says, you two start on her and give me a call when she stops fighting.
Oh, and Lizzie's going to help out because Lizzie's going to fuck her with her stump.
Oh, yeah. She says, because, she's like, her arms are spread.
Right.
And she's sitting there on the stage, and Lizzie's like, I usually like to use my fingers, but I guess that's not an option now. Yeah. So I've got other ways to.
Yeah. So right before she's about to, pile drive that stump right up in there, the other two guys die, collapse down.
Which they never really explained.
Well, it's implied they were poisoned, I would assume, because. And then Lizzie and Charlotte kiss, and then the tape rewinds again.
Mm-hmm. And you see that she did kick the crap out of her and stomp on her face, and then basically says, but you were right.
Yeah.
And then we go back even further to when they were on the side of the road, and basically Charlotte had this whole speech to her, and she's like, look, I know what you're going through. I knew that you were at that point where you could never get away unless I did something drastic. I have freed you. You needed to get away.
Yep.
You may not thank me now, but you'll thank me later.
But you'll believe me, now that you can't play, you have nothing to offer them, and they'll kick you. They'll kick you loose, basically.
They will never be there for you again.
Right. But I will be.
Yep.
And so when Lizzie goes back and, they disregard her, so then she goes see Charlotte, and rightfully so beats the fuck out of her.
Right.
But then now they plan this whole elaborate thing together.
Yep.
And
so then it's a little weird because the two guys died and they're laying there on the ground.
Yeah.
Anton comes back in and sits down like this is normal.
Yeah.
Charlotte's gone, Lizzie's gone. These two guys are just laying on the floor, and he sits down like, yeah. He's like smug and just staring at the stage. He's not suspicious or anything.
Right.
And then his wife steps into the room, and she's like, Anton? And he goes, did you get her to bed okay? Did she put up a fuss? Honey? And she's like, Anton? And she takes like two steps into the room, and he stands up, and he looks at her, and he's just like, he's very quizzical. And then she pisses herself, and they focus right in on the floor where she's pissing herself.
Yeah.
And then the other two walk in, who have now had time to change into sweats.
Yeah.
Instead of the ball gowns they were wearing. So they're now in sweats, and they kind of tap his wife, and she falls over, and you see there's a knife sticking out of her back, and they're like, we drugged her up so bad, she didn't even realize we'd stabbed her. Okay.
And then we have a big fight scene.
Which was
a violent fight scene between Steven Weber and the two girls.
Okay. But it was filmed really weird.
Yeah.
Because basically, Lizzie swings the cleaver, and then all of a sudden it's one of those action cameras that's right in Charlotte's face. And you see her like reacting like, oh, oh, and blood splattering on her, and there's noises coming from off camera. And then all of a sudden she takes a knife and swings it.
Yeah.
And then you see Anton's hands come around her neck and start throttling her, and she falls down to the floor. And then it pans back out and shows us that, there's a knife on the floor and he's crawling towards it.
And then he violently stabs Charlotte in the arm.
Oh.
It's like right through the two bones in the arm and just drags the knife down.
Yeah, your forearm, from your wrist to your elbow, there's two bones in there. And he stabbed right through the gutter and dragged it from wrist to elbow all the way through. I'm talking the knife was in one end, out the other, and dragged. It was one of the most violent.
Yeah, it's pretty graphic.
Oh.
Then they defeat him in the fight. I'm just going to say they defeat him. And then
later they really defeat him.
And then cut to later. Now you see like a close up of his face. Yeah. And when it pans out, he's got like a tube up his nose.
Yep.
And it's revealed that he's sitting in the chair and he's got a diaper on, I guess.
Yep.
But they've cut his arms and legs off.
And sewed his mouth and eyes shut.
No, his eyes are open.
No, his eyes are shut. They are sewn shut.
Oh, I thought they were open so we could see what was going on.
Nope.
Okay. No, no, that's fine. Regardless. But then... Oh, his eyes are sewn shut and his limbs amputated.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's forced to listen. Because
yeah. It reminded me of The Princess Bride.
Then Charlotte...
I'll leave your ears.
And Lizzie sit down together.
Because now you...
Charlotte's lost an arm.
Yeah, the one that he stabbed.
The opposite arm of Lizzie. So they have together a left and a right arm, and they proceed to play the cello together, where one works the neck and the other one works the bow, and it is one of the most disturbing, awkward scenes I've ever seen in a movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it only could have been more disturbing if they had somehow sewn themselves together.
Yeah, it was weird.
This was a weird, weird-ass movie.
This movie takes... multiple hard turns in opposite directions that, you know, when you're not expecting it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That being said, there's not a single person I've talked about this movie that's watched it that hasn't felt the same way. I wasn't expecting this. And then, you and me and others all on the same page when it comes to this flick.
Yeah. It kind of soured my stomach.
Yep.
Especially that knife through the arm thing. That really just... But the whole thing just... It was not... I don't want to say it was a bad movie. I definitely won't watch it again. I probably wouldn't recommend it to anybody.
Yeah.
But it was just so weird the way that it kept rewinding.
Yeah, it was different.
Yeah.
It was beyond different, but it was different. Got any news or trailers?
Yeah. A little bit. I saw the trailer for Teen Titans Go versus Teen Titans.
Okay. Didn't know that was a thing.
It's a multiverse thing, and I'll check it out when it comes on, like, HBO.
Spider-Man and the Spider-Verse movies on Netflix.
Yeah.
Just want to point that out.
And they have confirmed they're moving forward with the second one.
I heard that MCU is looking at doing 9 movies, or 9 total Spider-Man movies. Like they've signed Holland to do this huge contract where we've already seen 2.
Yeah.
Now we'll get a third one.
Oh, so they're counting Civil Wars?
No. Far From Home.
That's number 2.
That's number 2. The third one will also be him in high school, and then 3 of him in college, and then 3 of him post college, and then one.
That's what they say for now.
And then one big rumor. This is a huge rumor. You probably saw this one as well. They want to do a live action Spider-Verse one. Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield reprising their roles as Spider-Man.
I don't think it'll happen.
And my thought was they should get the Hammond fella that did the Spider-Man in the 70s as well. Because fuck it, why not?
Nice. Nice. I also, now this was interesting. I watched a trailer this week. I sent it to you, and I never got a response.
Oh, I thought I responded, sorry.
Charlie's Angels.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm interested.
Yeah.
It did something for me that I never thought could be done. And that's that it made me go, wow, Kristen Stewart looks attractive.
Oh, bullshit.
No, she did. She was smiling, so I didn't realize it was her. Legitimately. Like, I didn't realize it was her. I had to look it up. I love Elizabeth Banks.
I do, too.
Patrick Stewart as one of the Bosleys. Fuck yeah.
Yep.
Hell yeah. But it looks like more of a Mission Impossible rather than the goofy, over-the-top Charlie's Angels that we got from, like, Drew Barrymore and Lucy Liu.
I was about to say, because the original Charlie's Angels wasn't the goofy, over-the-top comedy like we got from them.
Yeah. No, this one looks much more Mission Impossible-y, and I don't know. I'm interested. I'm much more interested than I thought I would be.
Okay.
When I originally heard about this movie. That's all I have for trailers.
I read another thing about Marvel with Deadpool. Mm-hmm. Where they want to introduce him. They'd like to get him in Jason Crow. His big reveal, a big introduction into the MCU is supposed to be him as a part of Avengers.
Nice.
Allegedly. So.
Good.
He's going to keep his rated R edge.
Nice.
And
he'll probably comment on the fact that, you know, with the Avengers around, he can't swear. Yeah, probably. Be like, what, are you going to be a Boy Scout?
But also, there's talk of having him be in one of the Spider-Man movies.
I would love that even more, actually.
Yeah. So, as part of one of those nine, you know, the seven movies going forward, and being in one of those as well. But allegedly, he's supposed to be all over the MCU. Now, did you see that the alternate or the post-credit scene from the new Avengers got leaked on the internet?
No.
Yeah.
No, and that's okay because it's just a re-release.
Well, yeah, but it's a the new post-credit scene apparently is just a clip from Far From Home.
Oh.
Which is what I think all of us thought we were going to get anyways. Like, that's what they were going to do.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that. So, Sony Television Pictures, which you don't hear much from Sony. We've talked about that before. But Sony Television Pictures is creating a Final Fantasy TV series based around the current online Final Fantasy game, Final Fantasy XIV.
Yeah.
Very interesting. All they've said, basically, is that it's going to be based around that world.
Final Fantasy IV.
14.
14, okay.
The one that's the current MMO. I'm excited, but at the same time, I have no idea what they're going to do, so I don't know if I'm going to like it or not. But
you'll watch it.
I will.
I mean, you watch the other Final Fantasy films that they did.
Right, but this is an actual TV series, and it's based on a world.
I was about to say, I'm surprised we haven't seen a live-action version until now.
And I think that that's because, for the most part, like, Final Fantasy games are self-contained. Like, they tell a story.
Right.
So, I know that there are some things that can be made stories of, but, like, if you took, say, Spider-Man, since we were just talking about it, and made him into a weekly show, it might work, it might not.
Right.
Now, this was interesting, too. So, they gave us an info dump on the Haunting of Bly Manor.
Okay.
So, the Haunting of Hill House Season 2, called The Haunting of Bly Manor, will have at least one familiar face. Victoria Pedretti, who broke out in a big way in the first season as Nell, has landed the lead role in the second season of Netflix's anthology series. We're getting there. Whereas Hill House drew on Shirley Jackson's iconic haunted house novel, by the same name, Bly Manor is adapting Henry James's Turn of the Screw. So instead of saying, you know, oh, the first season was based on this one book that was really cool, now we're just going to make up stories like that, they're basing this one on a whole other one. Okay. So Deadline broke the news about Victoria Pedretti returning for the Hill House Season 2 cast. In this new season, a governess caring for two orphans in a big mansion begins to suspect the house is haunted. In Henry James's story, it's never specified if there really are ghosts in the house or if it's all in the mind of the governess. Pedretti will play that governess named Danny here, which means she's in for more mental anguish. So she's not reprising Nell.
Okay.
She's coming back as a different character, kind of like what they do with American Horror Story.
Yep, yep.
And yeah, the rest of it's just talking about how, like, you know, she's done other stuff in this, and, you know, there's other people who are coming back as, like, creators and stuff. So, yeah.
Well, if they do as good of a job on the second season as they did in the first season, I'm looking forward to it.
I am, too. And I'm wondering if it'll be another one of these slow burns where it's like you have to get halfway through before you go, oh, I really want to watch this.
I don't know. But, man, that whole reveal of the bent neck lady. Jeez, McCraw. That's right up there with Jigsaw coming up off the floor at the end of the first Saw movie. Which, by the way, the new Chris Rock Saw reboot has started filming.
Why?
I don't know.
Why?
Anything else?
That's it.
All right. Well, that's it for me as well. It's a good episode.
Yeah, it's a summer episode, so,
yeah.
You know, not a lot of different things, but we kind of went in depth.
Yeah, we tried it. Anyways, I'm Superstar Mile on Twitter.
I'm the Quantum Geek, G33K.
That's it.
Thanks.